What are you going to wear to the hockey game, dear? I think I'll go.
As Uncle Sam.
As Uncle Sam.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the latest episode of Mentality Monsters, where Fedja and I are privileged to be joined by a three-time national champion, an Olympic silver medalist at the 2010 Vancouver Games, as a member of the United States women's hockey team, Erica Lawler. Erica, welcome in. Thrilled that you could join us.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
First things first, you're a native of Massachusetts and a Wisconsin Badger. Do you ever think about retiring from winter?
Always, especially today. It's freezing out. I could only make it to Starbucks and back. That's how cold it was. I had to go back up. But yeah, a myth is that all ice hockey players can handle the cold, and I certainly can't. So, yeah. I want to retire from the cold.
Yeah, I did. We were just chatting about it. Left from New Jersey, went south to South Carolina. No regrets.
I just got back from St. Thomas, actually. My sister got married there, and I've been back for like 2 days. So it's very weird. I think I'm going to wake up to sunshine, and it's freezing cold. So quite a transition back. I'm like dreaming about the sun waking me up and nice weather, but instead it's like the taxi, you know, the taxis running by my window in New York City. So back into reality, but it was a really nice vacation. I do miss the sunny weather. And if yes, to your point, I'm not great in the cold.
New York makes the way the buildings are organized, they make the wind tunnels. So
yeah. Oh, totally. Wind tunnels are so bad.
Infinitely worse.
That's what made me move. I was working for the NBA and digital media operations. We worked the All-Star game and we got out at like 2:30 in the morning. So all the mass transit was shut down and it was February in New York. And like the wind was whipping so hard in between these buildings that I said to myself, I'm leaving.
I can't do this anymore.
That was it.
I'm gone.
That might happen to me soon.
And now after growing up on the East Coast and being raised in the snow, Kyle doesn't even have a winter jacket anymore.
Yeah, that is true.
You've fallen so far.
That's funny you say that because I don't even own a winter jacket. Like, crazy enough, I have like a couple work jackets that I can toss on, like maybe one wool jacket, but I don't have like a nice hefty winter coat like to go snowboarding in. So I actually had to borrow someone's coat to go snowboarding like weekends ago. So ironically enough, I don't even own a winter jacket. I'm still here. So that's going to be my next investment. I think I need it for my health. So
they say there's no such thing as cold weather, only improper attire.
Yeah, right. I need one of those Canada Gooses or something like that.
Well, you've had an illustrious career in hockey, and we would love to know, you know, what first attracted you to the sport.
It was, I first started playing street hockey, actually. That was the first way I was introduced to the sport. So, street hockey is just a lot cheaper and it's a lot more accessible for kids to sort of go down, play at the rink and try it out, see if you like it. And then you can make a bigger investment into the ice hockey scene. But, so I think I started because there was just a league right down the street, not even a mile away from where I was growing up. And me and my brother started playing together in this little, they were called the Chipmunks. Isn't that cute? Little Chipmunks, right? We started then. And my dad grew up playing ice hockey. So it was kind of in the family. And a lot of that happens with ice hockey a lot. It's like usually, you know, it's a passion that parents pass down onto their kids. And my dad certainly did that too. So I started street hockey, but my dad's influence was really important. So I started playing hockey because that was, you know, his passion. And so he introduced us to the sport, really.
Is street hockey a little harder than ice hockey because you can't I'm assuming you're playing on rollerblades. Like you can't like glide as much, so you have to be way more careful about how you move.
You know, actually, we started it on the pavement, and so it was no roller skates. It was just on feet. So, I started on feet, but a lot of people ask, like, I'm actually writing a script right now about this story, and somebody I've been exchanging it with, she was like, are you on rollerblades or on your feet? She's like, I'm a little confused, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I didn't point that out. That's an important detail, but yes, I actually started playing on my feet. And it's kind of nice because with ice hockey or hockey in general, you have so many skill sets, right? There's a lot of things that you're trying to learn all at once. So I like street hockey because, you know, it's uncomfortable when you're starting a new sport as it is. So when you go into an unfamiliar space, at least knowing how to walk and run, like that's helpful, right? It's just like baby steps into being brave enough to get on the ice or put a pair of rollerblades on because you feel like you've been exposed to, you know, the stick handling piece and like the shooting piece and just being on a team. So I think it's helpful to start on your feet in that way. I guess that's how I and maybe I'm biased towards street hockey because that's how I learned, but I do think it's a nice stepping stone into onto the ice because it can be intimidating, you know, because there's so many unknowns.
Yeah, no, that's actually really fascinating that it's a relatively, we'll say, forgiving environment for you to learn the other skills that once you then get to the ice when it's necessary to skate, you've already got, you know, the feel for, you know, vision, stick handling, you know, the dynamics of the game. So it's almost like that part goes into the subconscious and the skating becomes conscious.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah. I think and it's also just sort of, I think more of like a feeling of like, okay, I've done it on my feet before. And now I'm brave enough, right? You sort of muster up the courage because yeah, pieces of it feel familiar. So then you can then translate it onto the ice. So I definitely think, yeah, you worry less. And so you can be more present when you start out on the ice if you've been exposed to it in a maybe a different form before. So yeah, I like that. It was really helpful for me. I remember being really scared the first time I played street hockey. But the first time I played ice hockey, I was very confident. And that was really with very little experience and for no good reason besides I thought I was good at street hockey, you know? Yeah. And so that really helped me a lot when I went on the ice. I specifically remember that.
There's so much utility in that mentality really in everything you do.
Totally.
Like whether you think you're the best or you think you're going to do it or you're not going to do it, you're right.
Oh, it's so true. Oh my gosh, it's so true. And in my memory, like especially my street hockey memories are very vivid because it was me being introduced to a new game and it's really fun. It was the first time. And in my memory, I was like so great, right? Like I was the best one by far, you know? And I was putting on this theatrical performance, really, you know, thinking that I was just like the center of attention, that everyone was just cheering for me, and yes, I like to think that I was a standout at a very young age, but I actually revisited some home videos over the holidays, and I watched myself, and I'm like, wait a minute, I actually wasn't that much better than everybody else. I just really believed that I was, you know, for some crazy reason. I don't know what it was. Maybe my parents, but. That's so true. Like, it's so funny that mentality can lift you, into, you know, some really fun places, like physically. It's a very important mentality. And it's interesting how we can do that. We sort of can either think where, you know, I was a really bad self-evaluator, but it actually worked out in my favor, right?
Yep.
So if you're going to be a bad self-evaluator, like always think on the upside of it, right? Outside, which is the negative pieces. But yeah, when I was a kid, I certainly, you know, grew a lot of confidence very quickly. And it was based on those, you know, street hockey experiences. I think it was really the difference between, like, I think the change was that at first I was kind of like hesitant to get the ball. And then when I realized I could run to it and beat everybody to it, that in and of itself made me feel very empowered and very confident and was sort of like set the tone for my whole career, really, ironically enough. Yeah, it's interesting for me when I reflect back to see, like, these mindsets, right, that we that I had as a kid that I didn't that I necessarily wasn't like warranted or that didn't really have like, you know, they didn't stand on much. It was just this belief. And it translates nicely, I guess, you know, when you go and then you try to do something harder like ice hockey, where I, you know, that felt very seamless for me, a very easy transition. I wasn't scared to get let go of the chair. You know, at ice hockey, you start out with a chair.
Yeah, yeah.
You start with a chair, you know, and I wonder if I didn't have that introduction into street hockey, if that confidence would have still been there. I doubt it. I really doubt it because I remember being really, really scared the first time, being the only girl. I was playing with a bunch of boys too. So like just in general, really scared of like my surroundings and this new, you know, this new thing called sports. It's a game. And I, you know, I'm just trying to play or trying to see if I can play. I just remember being very nervous for that. But when I first started hockey, it's just more like excitement and joy and, I just had this weird confidence as a kid, which is great. And I'm very lucky I had it, but, it definitely, it can go a long way, especially at that age.
Do you still approach, so do you approach the things you're doing today with that same, as you said, poor self-evaluation where you think that you're able to do,
you know,
X, Y, and Z?
You know what I have to say, like I have these beliefs that I feel like whenever I want to do something or whenever I put my mind to something, I do believe that I can do it regardless of whether I'm qualified or not. But the hardest thing for me is to approach things as a beginner again, right? So I achieved this crazy level of success in sports and I became the expert at it. And that was kind of the life I learned and I grew to know, you know, is this life that I, you know, I'm striving for perfection really. And trying to fine tune all of these really intricate skill sets. It's like, you know, HD, right? You're trying to learn the sport in HD. So you're focusing on crazy details and, you know, you're just thinking about things in a different way. You're literally chasing perfection. And so as a beginner, you know, I forgot how much I fell playing that sport. I forgot how many times I messed up playing that sport, right? Because I just grew into being the expert, like I said. So to revisit, you know, what that mentality was like as a kid to sort of just approach things like fearlessly like that, that is a lot harder for me. You know, I definitely have this belief that I can do whatever I want to do. Like, and I think that making it to the Olympics sort of solidified that.
More than sort of, I would say.
I guess I'm sort of stuck with that belief. And that's a good thing because I'm not afraid to try new things and to, you know, like I said, I'm writing a script right now. Like what, I don't know what the heck I'm doing, but because I'm interested in it, I'm learning it and I'm trying to create something, you know? But the hard part of that is the learning process and, my ability to like take it easy on myself because I'm learning something new and then I don't have to be great at it yet because this is new to me. And that's a lot harder, but that's also very important to allow yourself to make those mistakes, allow yourself to be vulnerable, to mess up and all those things. Now it's a lot harder for me to be a beginner because I've already been there. I don't want to go back to being a beginner again. You know, like my ego doesn't like,
I love your story so much because, I love that, like the childish recklessness that you have when you're a kid, where you're just like so naive as to everything that you're capable of or that you're all the challenges you're going to face that you just dive into anything. And the reason I asked you that follow-up question was because it's so like everything I read about and think about when it comes to trying to foster that mentality that you have is like trying to recapture that like childish naivete to a certain extent so that you like truly believe that you can dive into anything and just power through it as much as you can. Cause as you grow older, you know, you start to become aware of how hard things are and what your expectations of you are. And then that stuff starts to wear away at you and it starts to degrade your case for like whether or not you can actually do whatever it is you're setting out to do.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, trust and joy are really the things that animate our youth. we have that inherently when we are young. And what we're discussing now has been quantified in that the extraordinary in the arts, athletics, almost anything, those top like 1% are disproportionately from really, really tiny towns. Mm-hmm. Because in that town, I'm the greatest baseball pitcher within 1,000 miles. And you just don't even know any differently. Like, no, everyone tells you you're amazing. You think you're amazing. And then before you know it, you actually are. And this really informed like my move to South Carolina. In New York was eating me alive. Like every job I applied for, there were 1,000 resumes that were better than mine. I didn't even get a sniff. So it was like, how much could you be told, like, and fed the narrative that you're not good enough before you're like, all right, no, I believe I am, and I'm going to go somewhere and do something where it honors that belief in myself.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny too. That's really funny that all they grew up in small towns and yeah. You know, you look around and you're like, oh, I'm so good. And that's such a huge part of the confidence thing. But also like you hit a certain threshold where then you get exposed to more people and, you know, you're really humbled through those experiences. And it's the ability to still believe that belief in yourself to continue to, I guess, you know, see yourself out or see out your goals or your dreams or whatever. It's really hard though, when you get to those points, right? Cause you do have like, I know for me, like when I was a little kid, I thought I was going to play in the NHL, like no questions asked, you know, like I will be the first woman obviously to play in the NHL because compared to all these boys, I'm just as good as them, if not better than like all of them. So, you know, but then, you know, puberty hits, things happen. And I get exposed to more things and more people. And that was a really hard part of my adolescence, I think, was like realizing not that like I think realizing the opportunities weren't there for me, you know. And so that was that then leads into like motivation and like, you know, and like just a bunch of other like mental things. But I guess, I don't really know where I was going with that, to be completely honest, but you do hit a point where I think your confidence really gets checked. And I do believe it's like, I mean, there's certain people who are just above and beyond, like, I mean, no matter what level they're at, probably like a LeBron James and, you know, like just like the crazy outliers amongst the outliers, like maybe their paths were never really got challenged as much. But I think the majority of every single athlete, regardless of what stage you made it in your career, you hit a point where it's middle school or high school where you definitely see reality, you know, and then your perception of yourself can then change, right? You see what's around you. You compare yourself. If you're a competitor and you're an honest competitor, you just compare yourself to everything and everyone around you. And you try to figure out what your strategy is, what your stick is, like, where do you belong in all of this? And where can you add value? You know, that's when I had to get really creative, I'd say, as an athlete, is when I hit high school. Yeah. And then you just have to work with it, right? You're gonna have to figure out how your confidence is going to ebb and flow too. Right. So it's like pretty much confident. And then like, zing, 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 it goes like this, you know, it's a monitor, a heart monitor, right? It goes up.
Yeah. The EKG.
Yeah. Yeah. The EKG. Exactly. It's like that. But you want to keep
it up. Use the word creative.
What's that?
You use that word creative. Mm-hmm. What ways were you being creative, like mentally?
So like my height, for example, like when people tell you you're not good enough, right? That's when high school pretty much will, yeah. Everyone will say, get that in high school, right?
Absolutely.
Like, let's be honest, right? Middle school, high school, we're all going to get it. Doesn't matter who you are, really. Like we're not good enough in so many ways. And my height was a real something that other people had a problem with, right? Like in terms of like college coaches, recruitment, parents, you know, other people's parents saying she's too small, she's not going to be able to play Division I hockey, or there's no way she'll be able to go to the Olympics. You know, my height was just such a big thing. And I think how I sort of was able to overcome that was to sort of build my game around actually the things that my height did for me, the ways that my height was actually an advantage for me, you know? And that's like size, speed, quickness, you know, grit. Those were the things that I had to really blow out in my game in order to make a difference on the ice. And those are things that other people didn't necessarily have because they had size. So they didn't really have the quickness. You know, they had great hands, so they didn't really have the speed, you know, a long reach. So they didn't really have the speed. So I had to make up for all the things that length could have helped me with my speed and quickness and my skating ability and my ability to go into the corner, sort of muck it up, get the puck and make plays in front of the net. So I guess that's how I got creative, is figuring out, okay, this is the problem, but my solution is actually creative because I'm using what you say is the problem and I'm turning it into my strength, you know? So I guess that's why I say like my process had to get a bit creative because I hit a lot of resistance just in terms of my height and how people perceived me because of my height. So I kind of just went and said, well, this is what my height actually does for me. And there's no other player that can do that. So that's really what I made sure I established when I was in high school so that people couldn't say no, you know?
For context for the listeners, Erica is 5 feet tall. Is it 4'11" or is it 5 feet?
No, it's 5 feet. But like, honestly, if I'm being honest, it's probably 4'11" 3/4.
I do that too. I'm 5'9" 3/4, but I say 5'10" because it makes girls think I'm more attractive.
It's ridiculous.
I actually looked this up in preparation for this because I was curious. I also wasn't going to ask you about this because I didn't want to be like the guy. I'm sure every single person brings up your height.
Yeah.
But I did look up the 2010 U.S. women's team roster to give the listeners perspective. So Erica is 5 feet tall. The average height of that team was probably somewhere around 5'6", 5'7". And that's the U.S. team. And you guys were primarily competing against the Canadians, who likely are pretty similar to the Americans, but then also like the Finns and the Swedes, who are probably all like 6'2", because they're giant humans.
I would say you have the averages pretty spot on, especially on Team USA. Yeah. Team USA is probably 5'6", 5'7". We were on the smaller side, though. Canada's probably on average, the Canadians usually have physicality as an advantage over the U.S. On the women's side. So they're on average like a little bit taller than the U.S. team is. The Swedes, when I was playing, were so big. I was they were so big at the time. I have a very funny photo of me like taking a hit from one of the biggest girls on their team. And it looks pretty bad. Yeah, it's pretty bad. It makes me cringe when I look at it. But yeah, they had some really talented, really tall players that year. So they probably averaged like a 5'8", to be honest. And Finland is, I'd say, pretty similar to the US and Canada, where they're like probably a 5'6", 5'7" on average. So yeah, like I'm a good half of a ruler, smaller than everybody else on average.
I read somewhere that mammals, as you move further away from the equator towards the north, they get bigger. So like white-tailed deer in Texas are really small compared to white-tailed deer up in Canada. So presumably that also applies to humans, given where Sweden and Finland are.
100%. That might be true. I'll have to fact check that one. That's funny. I'm actually reading a book called Sapiens right now.
I read that book. Oh, it's incredible.
Got it.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law got it for me. He knows me well.
Okay.
I can't wait to dive into it.
Yeah, I just started it, so I wish I could reference that book right now, but I feel like I'll probably learn a little bit about, you know, how, I guess, our size has been impacted by our history.
Yeah, he contextualizes, like, one of the things that makes humans so amazing, especially compared to other animals, is that we can, like, imagine things. Like, we can create thought experiments and imagine connections between things and connections between people that aren't like physically there. So we have this ability to go beyond our physical surroundings and then pull from those things and turn them into realities. Like, hey, I have this idea or this concept that I'm going to now make a real thing. And that's like, he's such a good writer. You're going to love that book so much. Mm-hmm. I read it in like in a week, and I'm a very slow reader. So, okay. So that's a big deal for
me. Yeah. I have the audio book because I'm a very slow reader. So I have it and I listen to it, but I feel like I might need the, like I there's a lot of words I don't know. And so like, I like to look at them and then look them up. So I might have to buy it, but yes, I'm listening to the audio book right now. It does sound like a really good book. And it reminded me of everything you were just saying. So
isn't it more fun living with the belief that there is so much weird things about our species that we couldn't even dream of explaining?
Yeah.
Like this guy will try to come close and likely like, just let you know.
Yeah, totally. As I'm listening, I'm like, how did he write this? Like who writes something like this? This is crazy. Like to try to figure out how to capture like basically evolution. It's crazy.
Yeah. In a way that's not, in a way that's just as much spiritual as it is like factual and also like philosophical as well. Like it's just an incredible view on how it all came together, like how humanity came to where we are today. He has another one that looks at like 21st century man, and he like kind of predicts what's going to happen in the future and where we're going to go. That's also pretty interesting.
I bet that's interesting too. Probably some scary stuff.
Yeah, we're all going to be machines.
Yeah.
So, tangential to the creative mentality that you employed to, you know, manipulate the input you were getting into your favor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, what were some other keys to your personal preparation, as well as the national team's preparation, like ahead of international competitions?
Yeah. Okay. So for my personal preparation, honestly, I just work really, really hard. Like I just work so hard. I work so hard. It makes me exhausted to think about. I just trained that was probably where mentally I was really strong, was my ability to just work and work harder and harder and harder and be very gritty. That was a huge edge for me. I just had this like chip on my shoulder. I just knew how to like really like, I don't know if it's like a form of expression or not, but just sort of really pour everything that I had into my game and into training. I was really good at channeling all of my energy into that one place, focus, you know, and I'm not a good focuser, really. I'm not a good focuser. I have ADHD, but hockey was this thing that I could just like, really, you couldn't pull me away from it. If you know, you put a circus on like the right side of my peripherals, you know, I wouldn't be distracted by it. But yeah, I'd say that work ethic and just my ability to just focus and kind of obsess, you know, over little details and just like really fine tune certain skills like skating, you know, just being kind of obsessed with feeling my body on my skates and figuring out how to do everything efficiently. And you know, that's a kind of one of those examples, but a lot of other, you know, like a goal scorer will probably just be so obsessive about like the way that they shoot, the way the puck comes off their stick or where they're, you know, where they're flexing the stick in order to get the puck in a certain area or the net, you know, just to get leverage on it. Right. So we grow up and we become really specialized in ways, kind of like doctors, right? Like doctors go to med school, they become really specialized. It's like Olympians, they get to a certain point where you're at the national team level, and then you kind of get really specialized in your role. And, you know, that's what the coaching staff figures out what role you're going to play. And then you sort of figure out how to do that the best way possible. And so I think my story is like small, gritty, fast, quick, you know, I was kind of a little shit disturber, you know, and I made plays, and I killed penalties and I had to figure out how to do that the best way I could, right. To bring, you know, the best version of me, onto the team and into the locker room. So, yeah, I'd say that's kind of what I did. That was my path. My dad still today is mad at me that I didn't take more shots because he think I could have scored more goals. Maybe I sort of was too focused, right, and too specialized. Like I think there was a point where I probably could have challenged myself to be a better shooter, But I'm trying to be nice to myself and say, hey, look, you did a good job. You made it to the Olympics. Okay. You don't have to dwell on the past. But I think right now, as the women's hockey team actually is gearing up for the Olympics in February, they were on a tour. So what happens? So US and Canada are the biggest rivals in women's hockey. It's North America. We butt heads big time. We hate each other. You know, the two teams are bred to hate each other. And that's just what we learn. And that rivalry is still going strong. And
were we watching the 2012 World Championship together?
Or that was the 2013 Olympics. That was the 2013 Olympics we watched together. Yeah. And I threw my hat, right?
Yeah. I could attest to this.
And then
this
I went to the bathroom and cried.
Yeah. Like I just wanted to interject there because to like really paint the picture of this like American Canadian hatred, like you looked like you would have needed to nap for 3 days like after the game and you were just watching it on TV.
Yeah, I remember that distinctly. The whole company was watching, I think, because they knew how invested I was emotionally.
Oh, absolutely.
And then when so the Canadians actually came back from a 2-0 deficit in the third. U.S. was up 2-0. 2 minutes left. Canada scored 2 unanswered goals and to tie up the game. And I didn't throw my hat at that point. I was still hanging on for dear life. But the Canadians came back out in overtime period. The Americans got a penalty. I see. I remember it very vividly.
Oh, this recall is brilliant.
Yeah, it was 3-4. They were going into overtime, and the Canadians actually got a power play goal. The refs made a terrible call. They called a penalty in OT, and then the Canadians ended up winning, which was so heartbreaking. And that was the point where I threw down my hat. My best friend is the captain of the team, and a lot of my best friends were still on the team. I was so connected still at that point emotionally to all the players and still had really strong feelings of like, you know, just pride and like resentment towards Canada and like, you know, just pride for, you know, have represented the country before and love and respect for that team and all the ups and downs they've sort of had, you know, I lived through that with them. And so I felt personally like, saddened by something like that because I was such a big part of that team, even though I wasn't there. You know, I wasn't there on the ice, but I felt like a part of the team in a way because I was a part of their building process, you know. But yeah, that was hilarious, Kyle. Very funny that you remember that.
I do. Yeah. I think I'm still coming down off the energy.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah, you were feeling it. You were feeling it. Yeah. The whole, it was so funny. There was a point in time where I looked back and the entire company was behind me.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, good. I'm glad this is contagious at least. Yeah.
So how do you think the U.S. women's hockey team now is preparing for these international competitions? How did you, when you were on the team, how did you, one of the things that Kyle and I are really interested in is how all of the team members talked to each other. Like, what did you say to each other? How did you communicate? Like, how did you motivate each other?
Yeah. We're really lucky in ice hockey because we kind of like, we don't compete against each other, obviously. Like there's a lot of sports where you kind of like gymnastics, like you compete against each other and but you're also teammates. It's such a hard, that is so hard. I don't know how those gals do it. I'd like to talk to one of them, but
yeah, it's pretty nasty.
Yeah, it can get nasty, but I think we're lucky because we all play different positions. And, you know, a part of the process is like coaches setting your expectations and like telling you which role you're playing so that everyone can sort of like come to terms with their role on the team before the Olympics. So right now, like being 2 weeks before, you're just like gassing everybody up and like making sure everyone has so much confidence going into that tournament. You just want to make sure everyone feels like trusted and everyone feels safe in the locker room and everyone feels like they have the support they need from around them, right? And everyone just trusts that everyone's going to do their job, right? So right now it's just like, it's kind of a love fest, right? You've gone through all the ups and downs, the hard parts of trying to transition into roles that you're not necessarily used to playing in because it's a group of all-stars. They're all used to playing the all-star role. So there's a lot of, you know, just you got to untangle the knots, right, of trying to like have these egos really readjust to these new positions that they're maybe not used to, right, and get that buy-in, right? So they have buy-in at this point. That's a big thing is buy-in, and they have that, And now it's just time for everyone to like love on each other and hype each other up. And yeah, just sort of get like, you're like, you get so pumped at this point because all the hard training is done. Like mostly all the hard practices are out of the way. They might have one more like really hard bag skate, but I doubt that, you know, but they're all in great shape at this point. And so you're like working on specialty skills, like power play a lot. You're working on not so much penalty kill. It's hard to like work on penalty killing because it's so exhausting. But power play, they'll probably be working on a lot of like odd man rushes, you know, three on twos, like transitional play, you know, flow drills, which are basically just, you know, you pass a couple times and you don't have to stop and start. You're just, you know, skating, you're just crossing over and skating down the other end of the ice with each other and, you know, playing two on ones and three on twos. As a forward, those are the kind of ideal practices where, you know, you get to play a bunch of odd man rushes. You get to play offense the whole time, you know, and defense, you get to work on, you know, your skills too, right? It's important for defense to know how to defend all these different kinds of situations. So I think strategically they're doing a lot of power play work. And I guess less X's and O's in terms of, I actually know probably increased X's and O's all right now at this point, since they're all in shape and they all kind of, you know, they know the drill, but they also know Team Canada, right? These teams have been playing against each other for so long. There's really not many new things that you can throw at them. And you get really good at playing against them because you learn them so well. You know, it would be like, you know, if you're a baseball player and you're batting against a certain pitcher, if you see that pitcher like 10 times, you kind of can predict what to expect or at least like, you know, have a couple plan A, plan B, plan C in place, you know, just in case things switch up. But yeah, I think right now it's pretty, just a, like I said, just a little love fest. They're just, you know, they're concealing the culture and they're making it a fun, safe place for everyone to show up for practice every day.
Yeah. I love the phrase, concealing the culture.
Yeah.
The word kept popping into my mind while you were speaking there was insulation, like you're insulating from outside noise and even insulation and then specifics, the specifics of the game situations, the roles. It's an attention game. You want to have all that put in the exact right places, the affirmation of who you are as a team, what your role is, and then, you know, the specific drills within that role. So
yeah,
those are two things I picked up from that, which I imagine are incredibly valuable, you know, to any listener to apply to any area of your life.
Yeah. At this point, like, I mean, it gets crazy at the end, right? You give very little energy to anything outside that bubble at this point, right? Very little energy. And that's what, when you say you insulate, like, yeah, that's where it's all going to like build the inside, you know, to insulate the culture, the environment that you're in, you know, and give very little, like my family got such little attention from me. And during January before the Olympics, my relationships outside of hockey, like, you know, you put all of that sort of on the back burner. It's a sacrifice at the same time, you know, like I didn't drink a lick of alcohol, like for a year, I would say, you know, for almost a year. Your social life, you don't have one. You know, you don't have a social life outside of the locker room. So everything right now is like hyper-focused on getting the gold medal at the Olympics. And that's like that. If you're a hockey player, like that is it. That is the one outcome. You know, it's not to medal. It's not to get silver. It's one medal that counts, you know? And yeah, so it's pretty intense in that way, which is why the culture is so important. Right. Because it is cutthroat. It's really intense, but you have to love on your teammates because that's kind of that's the lightness through all the, you know, through all the pressure is to really rely and you know, find a lot of, I guess, I don't know, like the joy of that piece, the light, all of it. It's like it's all in the locker room, you know, and then playing in the games. But right now they don't have games for a while. So it's just practice. And so to keep the energy up, they have to just bring a lot of it to practice every day and just keep reinforcing like all these like confidence builders and And that's just basically like reinforcing to everybody on the ice that they're doing a great job and that they're doing their job and that they basically believe in each other, you know. It sounds cliche, but it's really true. You know, those bonds are really important.
What's so interesting about this, harkening back to the book Sapiens, and as Fedra was talking about, we're the only species that can speak about insulation and culture and belief. Like, these are qualitative things, mm-hmm. not quantitative. Like, how many units of culture do you have? Like, how many units of confidence do you have?
Yeah.
Like, they cannot be measured. Right. And yet, in preparation for something so important, that's the only thing that matters, something that right. can't even be quantified.
I know. And it drives a lot of us nuts too, right? It drives away, right? It kind of drives you nuts. People who want to know the answers to everything and like people who see things more black and white, like, but it's just a feeling. And I've been on teams where, you know,
I resonate.
It's just a feeling. And, yeah. So, I mean, you know, you're getting married this year, like, right. It's just like, there's like it's a chemistry culture type of thing. You know, you're starting your family, Kyle, you're building a culture soon of your own little family. And it's just a feeling. You create this like energy, and some teams can be really successful with the energy they've created. And some teams like can go downhill really quick. And honestly, like, I think in 2014, that was probably USA's problem. That year, Kyle, that you saw me watch the games with, I think the culture was a fear culture. That's what the leadership like sort of created for the team, and it wasn't healthy. And I think, you know, when push came to shove at the end of the game with 2 minutes left, if you don't have a strong culture and that belief and that trust in each other, things are going to fall apart. And I don't think USA had it in 2014, unfortunately, which is why they lost. So those things are really, really important. And yeah, it can drive you crazy because they're intangible. And, you know, it's hard to measure, like, what does that mean, you know, and how do you create it? Sometimes it's just, I don't know, the matter of like, you know, switching a couple players on the roster. You know, sometimes it's like, maybe if you just put this person on this line and switch that line to this, then that it'll change the entire, you know, momentum of a game or a locker room, you know. And it's really hard to make those calls because it could also have the opposite effect, which is like you're just creating chaos in a situation that needs to feel comfortable. So it's really hard to create that. That's a tough one.
What you described for the like about the culture and the preparation reminded me of a general like preparation tactic where you leading up to whatever you need to do, you convince yourself that you're the worst in the world at it. So you're really strict and you go really in depth on all of the things that you're doing right, all the things that you're doing wrong. You're your own worst critic because you need to correct all of the elements of your game or your presentation that might be lacking. But then right before you step into that room or you step onto the ice, you convince yourself the exact opposite. You convince yourself that there's no one on the planet better than you at what you're about to do. And it sounds like the team has made that switch where you mentioned yourself, like all the players are in shape and they've drilled everything to exhaustion. And now it's just a matter of building up confidence and building up connection between all the different players and then riding that wave into the Olympics, which is fascinating. You know, it's drawn out on a longer scale, but
any Olympian
I tend to take that
really good at that skill. Any Olympian that I know is very good at that, being so nitpicky, being your best, right? But you're your best friend and you're your worst enemy and your best friend, right? You can't forget to be your best friend too. And that's, you know, the day of the game, you walk into the locker room and you are the best at what you do, right?
Yeah.
And that, you have to know that, right? So it's that. You yes, exactly. You know, you convince yourself every day that you're the worst, but you are your best friend. You are your best friend one day of every week if you have a game a week, right? And it's on game day. And it pays off. But yeah, you know, I'm not a big like I was very hard on myself, but I wouldn't say I'm a big like advocate of being that hard on yourself. I think I could have actually 100%. Been a better player if I were able to let some of those things go, you know. I think I would have been more present. I think I could have, you know, like I just think I was a kid really intense about accomplishing a goal. So I was obsessive about it. Yes. But like, as I grow up, I'm like, I think I could have been just as successful or maybe even more if I lightened up on myself a little bit, you know, gave myself a little cushion and like a little pat on the back every now and again, you know? So, I do think like you have to definitely self-evaluate and be tough on yourself, but, you know, give yourself some grace too. Like, I think that, you know, it's not worth it otherwise, you know?
Yeah. You don't want to self-sabotage.
You don't want to, exactly. Cause you can very easily self-sabotage. I did that a million times in my career, right? Like I learned not to do that. I was really good at it when I was like really young in college. And I just, you would go down these rabbit holes of like negativity and like, I'd get caught up in that storm and then be like, whoa, you know, like slowly pull yourself out of it. Small steps. Let's go. You have some work to do, you know, but that was a real thing. My sophomore slump, you call it sophomore slump. That's what we called it. You know, my expectations were were through the roof and I just kept, you know, pushing at myself harder and harder and harder and kind of went down like a dark, depressive hole because of it, you know, and that wasn't, that made me worse. So I, you know, I had to overcome that. And I think obviously a part of overcoming that was a part of my process, you know, so it did make me more mentally tough, more mentally like in tune. But, you know, if anyone's going through that, I would just say small steps to try to get out because you need to recreate those, you know, different patterns that are going to work for you. Cause that wasn't working for me. And yeah, it took my coach actually to intervene at one point to be like, what's going on? Like, are you okay? And I'm like, you know, I had my, you know, 5 minutes with him. I got everything off my chest. And then I was like, okay, time for me to look in the mirror and do something about this, you know? And that's what I did. It was a really important part of my, you know, my process. Cause I don't know if I kept going, like I said, if I kept going down that lane, I definitely wouldn't have become an Olympian. That's for sure. You know, I would have self-sabotaged. I would have self-destructed for sure. I would have done it to myself and that would have been tragic. So luckily I've had some good checks and balances in my life too, which have been important.
And earlier you mentioned during competition, you use the phrase, eventually you see reality.
Yeah.
And so like the negativity is like an exploratory attempt to see reality on your own. You're like, okay, how do I invite reality into this evaluation?
Yes.
Yeah. And you could get lost.
Yeah.
You said you get lost in that chaos of the like the darkness, the negativity, the black, you know, yin and yang. It's easy. And so many people get to go down that slippery slope, you know, with no rope.
Right.
To tether them, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. I had a rope and that was a good rope. I really appreciate that rope. You know, sometimes other people have to throw it down to you, right?
Yes.
And sort of give you a little, you know, pull you up a little bit and then you have to do the climb. But yeah, you need that rope no matter who it is. But you got.
And sometimes rope's a book. It could be, you know.
It could be the book.
Yeah.
Someone needs to throw you a rope. Yeah. Surround yourself with great people. Surround yourself with a lot of rope. That's true. It's very true.
How did you, as well as the national team, stay hungry? I mean, it sounds like to a degree, you know, US and Canada is like Apollo Creed and Rocky, right? So you're like off of each other. You always want to, you know, be better than them. Yeah. So outside of your opponent, right? Cause I hear it in your voice now, you still want to be the best. You're writing a script. Yeah. You want to be Martin Scorsese.
Right. Right.
You know, like how do you keep that?
I don't know. I think like inspiration's so important. I'm like very easily, not easily inspired, but when I'm inspired, like that emotion is like incredible. So I try to do like as many things as possible to feel inspired by people, like whether that's like other novice writers, like, you know, taking the plunge and like sharing their work with me, or like whether it's, you know, just watching my friends hustle at like trying to do their job, you know, like those, like watching a good television show. I watched the Colin Kaepernick special. Oh, I forget what it's called. It was amazing. I loved it. That was really inspiring to me. Like to see another athlete tell his story, you know, that was inspiring. So that emotion, I'm so emotion based. Like I really live my life based on my emotions. And I think inspiration, I always am trying to find that. And when I was playing hockey, it was so easy. All I had to do was walk in the locker room and there were the 20 of the best hockey players in this country standing like all around me. Right. So that is just so, that is so empowering. And that is so, so, so motivating and so inspiring. Like that in it of itself, to be practicing at that level of talent every day amongst that level of talent, it's the thing I miss the most. Truly, that's the thing I miss the most in my life, because I'd never met a group of people like that before in my life. And I don't think I'll ever have the pleasure of working on a team like that ever again, to be completely honest. Like it's kind of just a crazy passionate energy. We all have it. We all have this weird like X factor of like, you know, we're all so emotionally like deep with it. You know, and we're up to our eyeballs in like passion. And yeah, that kind of just fuels off itself, really. You know, like if you're in another room with somebody who cares so much about something, I mean, you're going to find that topic and just keep going back and forth over it, you know, and it's just going to keep building and building and building. That's exactly what it does in the locker room, is like, you just have all these people that care about this thing with you. And as throughout the course of the year, it just keeps, you know, you just keep throwing gas on the fire, really. You just keep, you know, working hard and burning, you know, nose to grindstone. You're in the trenches with each other. That's cliche, but that's how you feel. And so naturally, like you're always like motivated by the energy that comes with it. You know, you're a part of this, I don't know, this thing that's bigger than yourself, and that momentum and that energy can really take you a long way.
I would refer to that as rocket fuel.
Yeah, versus, rocket fuel. I would refer fuel to it as that too. Yeah.
Yeah, because rocket fuel burns clean, and you can go to space.
Right.
Like jet fuel.
Yeah.
Jet fuel, which is the self-hate. Mm-hmm. Right? We were talking about that. That's mm-hmm. the self-hate.
Yeah.
The inner critic is the jet fuel. It's like, okay, you're going to get to 30,000 feet, right? You're in college. Right. You're good. You're 30,000 feet, but you can only like get to the other side of the country, and it's like carbon dioxide. It's dirty. Okay. The rocket fuel, though, that inspiration you're talking about, this resonates with me.
Yeah.
I'm sure I overwhelm Fedja with the emotional energy sometimes too. Like I'm just with it on this. Mm-hmm. Like you get that jet fuel and you're out of the atmosphere.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the fire energy. And I respect that.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's like, when you're playing Nintendo and you're like turbo mode, you know, you go into turbo mode. <right? Yeah. laughs> I'm referencing Super Nintendo back in the 90s when I was playing like NBA 96, I think. And there was like, you could press the button on the top of the controller. And
yeah.
With turbo. Turbo mode, or maybe I don't remember what game it was, but one of those. Yeah, but it's such an important thing in life, right? For athletes, non-athletes, just motivation, especially in a time through COVID. I've realized really how much having people around me motivates me and inspires me, whether I believed so or not before. I realize now that it does, and I reflect on that experience and I think, whoa, like they brought out next level shit in me, right? Like those friggin' women like brought out next level, like everything inside of me. So, it's just, you got to surround yourself with people who,
they put rock jet fuel in their tank too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. But yeah, I miss it. I miss it. I miss being on that team.
Was there ever a moment you thought about like hanging it up earlier than you actually did?
There was a moment where I thought I was, there was never a moment where I thought I was going to hang it up before I did, but there was a moment where I wanted to quit hockey. I was in eighth grade. I mean, that's just a tough time for any kid, like eighth grade, trying to figure out what your place in the world is, or like where you fit into the world, and like how you fit into society. What does society think of you? Like, and how that impacts your self-concept, all those things. But yeah, I basically just didn't really think that there was a space for women in the sport of ice hockey or in sports in general. And I was like, you know what? Like, all of my talents are wasted. And I'm just so sad. I'm like, mom and dad, I'm quitting. Like, what's the point of my existence? Basically, this isn't going to get me anywhere in life. And I sort of, you know, I took on that teenager like negativity. And my parents obviously didn't let me quit. They sent me to a prep school at that point, because that's how you played hockey growing up, usually like on the East, or on the East if you were a woman and you're in high school. You go to a prep school if ice hockey is something you're going to be really competitive about. So at that point where I was starting to think I wanted to quit, luckily freshman year was right around the corner, and my parents were like, okay, you need to go try out this school for 2 weeks. If you hate it, then you don't have to do it. But I tried it out for 2 weeks and I just loved it. So
the old parental lifeline. Just do it for 2 more weeks.
Totally true. Just 2 more weeks.
That's like Kyle and I's entire swimming career.
Oh yes.
It's just 2 more weeks.
Somehow I kept taking that biscuit like a rabbit on a treadmill. Yeah. Just see it out to the end of the year. Oh my God.
That's so funny.
I had another simpler question. Do you still draw an up arrow on your hand when you want to do something?
No, I don't do that anymore. I stopped that, I think, right when I stopped playing hockey, actually.
How come?
I think that point of my life where I stopped playing hockey, I think I wanted to get rid of everything that had to do with it, right? So like I think I really seesawed, you know. I went to a point where hockey was everything, and then I'm like, you know what, I can't even look at this sport anymore. I need to change everything. I need to completely separate myself from it. And I think that mentality sort of meant to leave behind all of those rituals or anything I had picked up from hockey. And you know, in my years since, I've been reintegrating certain things. Maybe I'll bring the arrow back. But yeah, that's funny. I did a
video. I went deep. I went deep on the research. Did you
see the video on YouTube?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It was hard to find, surprisingly. Like that was like that was probably like the 10th thing that popped up when I was searching, because I was looking for game highlights, and then that pregame ritual came up.
You know what? I played so long ago, they don't have any like game highlights of me.
I know. I was explaining this to Kyle.
Kyle laughs. I'm like so sad. I'm like, this is how old I am. I was like, I was before the times of technology, like even YouTube. I feel ancient. I'm only 34, by the way, but
it's so funny. It's so funny you bring that up, because I was right before you hopped on, I was talking to Kyle. I was like, yeah, I was looking for game highlights, a bunch of stuff, but like all of that was going on when YouTube was really primitive and like before teams had social media organizations.
Yeah.
But I will say one, I will bring up one. I did find you on the ice once in a highlight.
Ooh, you did.
And it wasn't a good highlight. It was in Vancouver. The first goal that Canada scored against you, against the US, you were on the ice. Yeah. I was like, there she is.
I was on the ice. I'll never forget it. Yeah. I remember she was in the, yes, I know exactly where I was.
It wasn't that great of a goal. It was one of those like kind of snuck in. It shouldn't have.
Oh, what just happened?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Was that my person?
Cheap goals and maple syrup. Those Canadians, that's what they do best.
Yeah. Cheap goals and maple syrup. That's funny.
But, you know, I regret not saying this right before we asked you about quitting. Mm-hmm. I was like, I'll bet you're an amazing quitter. Like at things that you like, no, seriously, like if it doesn't serve you anymore, drop it. Like, done.
Oh yeah. If things don't, I definitely do. If they're not serving me anymore, I definitely mental patterns are a lot harder, but like physical things, like, you know, if I'm not interested or like if I'm not good at something or like I don't feel like I, you know, like I'll just drop it. I'm like, nope, that's not for me. Or I'll delegate, you know, like this isn't really my strength. You can do this. Or, you know, I don't like holding on to too many things, but like the things that I do love and the things that I do, I like to do really well. So,
yeah. I'll tell you what, I think, because I really like resonate like personality wise with everything you've said so far. Mm-hmm. I really think that the ADD, ADHD tendency is a test to see it like if you stick with this, it's you've broken that energetic barrier where it's with you now.
Yes. Yeah, totally. I think you're right.
You're focused on it now. Like if you can get through this initial period, like, cause it's your spirit, that motivation, the rock, if you will, that's going to push you to keep studying that subject or doing that thing beyond the ADHD period where you're like, I can't focus on this.
Yes.
And if you could break through that, it's yours.
Right. Yeah.
It's yours.
It is. That's 100% true. That is 100% true. It's the hardest thing to find in my adult life, truly, is something that can really like capture my attention the same way hockey did. But I'm finding now that as I, you know, I just kind of wrestled through those like first 30 minutes of like distractions or whatever, and sort of just sit into myself, and then I can focus. I'm like, okay. And then I can't, then like, don't text me, don't call me. Get mad, you know, like do not even try to contact me. You know, my family gives me crap for it all the time. They're like, whenever you're focused on something that actually captures your attention, you literally can't do anything else. Like I actually can't. Like, I really truly can't. I don't even hear the other things happening. You know, I can't, I have no concept of where I am in time or space. But yeah.
All right. Final prediction, U.S. women's team, these upcoming games in February.
Okay. Well, they have to win gold. Like I could never vote against them. So they're going to win gold and it's going to be 4-3.
In the final against Canada?
Yeah, in the final against Canada.
They have the opportunity to win back-to-back, right? They'd be the first U.S. team to do it. Didn't they win gold last time?
They would be the first U.S. team to win back-to-back. You know what? You know what like my heart wants, though, or like what the sport of women's hockey wants is Finland to win the gold medal. That's what I'm allowed to say because the odds are low. But like, I would love to see Finland get a gold or a silver. But I'm rooting for Finland hardcore this tournament. Yeah,
I'm gonna be dialed in now. I'll tell you, I'm gonna be dialed in.
I'm gonna be dialed in. Yeah. I mean, I'm allowed to say that because, like I said, the odds are a little bit lower that Finland will come out with the medal, but they are talented, and I never take them lightly. They're a very good, very good team, very skilled. They have a great goaltender. I'm really excited to watch them too.
The other item we wanted to ask you before departing was what the most exciting thing on the horizon is for you now, and I think you alluded to it, which is the script you're writing.
Yeah, I'm writing the script and it's been really fun. I've learned a lot about myself through it. It's been an interesting like passion project. So I would say like my goal would be to, I don't know, work with, you know, an actual screenwriter soon and help me edit it or something. You know, I'm not really sure what the path is, but once I finish it, I'll put a lot more energy into the what happens next. But for now, I'm just sort of trying to, you know, focus on the actual script itself. And then once I have something, you know, try to network my way into finding some people who can help.
Thank you for sharing that with us. We're happy to support in any way possible. I'll endorse the Erica Lawless story.
Okay. All right. Sweet.
I don't know if that's worth anything, but I saw the scene in the script where you were like losing it over the national team in 14. So, like Stephen King,
yes, it's time. I'm glad to know that you are in full support and that you are also feel like a very much a part of the story, because the timelines definitely overlap. One of the timelines of the plot. So,
Stephen King writes all his novels from one scene out. Like the whole book is written to get to that scene. And that's the one right there, like raw passion, everyone in the whole room deferring to you just because of just this energetic like field that you generated. So I'm in.
I love it. Sweet.
I'll close out by saying there's a wonderful book called Story by Robert McKee, which is all about how to write a screenplay and how to write like compelling stories specifically for like television and Hollywood.
I shouldn't forget it. But
McKee. I read it once because I had a dream to do what you're doing now. I too am a good quitter, so I quit as soon as I realized that I wasn't going to commit to it. But it's an incredible book and definitely worth your time if that's what you want to do.
Thank you. I will definitely read it. Thank you guys for having me. This has been great. So nice to.
Yeah, a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us. And for all listeners, please like and subscribe. We're on Spotify, iTunes, and thank you for listening to this episode in its entirety.
Tell your friends.
And go USA.